my son. Scary, little bit scary. Well, you might recall back when I ran for president, had me a little slogan, 1,000 points of light. Remember that? Sure you do, you were two. Now my son, he was a bit of a party boy back in college, little bit of a partier, bit more like 1,000 pints of light, if you know what I mean. So let's welcome him out here now, my son, George W. Bush.
You are my father, and I hate to bother. Believe me when I say I want it Dad's way.
Now, George, you've got my genes, and you know what that means. You will get the big push, 'cause you're a son of a bush.
Tell him, Dad, how you offered me campaign tips.
I said, run an ad showing Monica. Read her lips.
Gee, that's rad.
That kind of stuff is child's play. You want it that way.
I've got no experience running this land from running a baseball club, yeah.
That's okay, son, I will lend you a hand.
I'm not a bush, just a shrub.
Hi, Dad.
Hi, Grandpa.
Hey, Jenna. Hey, Barbara. You made the front page for drinking underage.
I think that beer rocks.
You're a chip off the block.
Tell me why.
You're using that fake
ID. Tell me why.
You can't resist a party.
Tell me what you'll become acting that way.
I don't know. President someday?
You might have just heard, babe. It ain't no lie. The Democrats had to go. Oh, 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 oh. So remember I told you that I really believe the liberals will cry. Maybe that's why every little thing we do should be really good for you. We don't want to lose it again. We're not like the Dems. Baby, when you finally choose your favorite party, guess what? It's the GOP. Hey, you know me, I'm GWB, and I followed my daddy to the presidency. Girls try to sex us, questions perplex us. I'm straight out of Texas in my brand new Lexus. I'm fresh, no preservatives, you'll say I'm superlative, kicking it with my compassionate conservatives. Now I'm the president, and it ain't no joke. I only drink Pepsi, 'cause I won't do Coke. I'll just be chillin', please don't be illin'. Your wallets I'll be fillin', I'm a tax-cuttin' villain. They say I'm dumb, but don't let it trouble you. Give it up for the dope rhymes of the W.
Yes, I'm Dick Cheney, yes, I'm the real Cheney. I'm not all soft and all John McCainy. So will the real Dick Cheney please stand up? Please stand up, please stand up.
Well, I'm McCain, see, I'm not like Dick Cheney. When I grab power, I'm just like Khomeini. So will the real Dick Cheney please stand up? Please stand up.
Can't stand up.
Every little thing we do should be really good for you. We don't want to lose it again. We're not like the Dems. Baby, when you finally choose your favorite party, guess what? It's the GOP.
Excuse me, Mr. President. Excuse me, sir.
What's on your mind?
Mr. President, now that you're out of office, I'd just like to ask you a couple of questions. I mean, about that Monica Lewinsky thing.
Who?
Come on, Mr. President. How were you able to avoid prosecution?
Let me just check my position statement on that, and, oh, yeah, let's see. I said, it wasn't me.
'Cause talking in and he got your red hand and creeping with the girl at work. Pictures of you with the fat intern and your wife went berserk.
How can we forget what you had said to us that night on TV? All this talk of sex, was that a right-wing conspiracy?
I'll never admit
to you that I got my freak on. Republicans would just have another thing to speak on. So what if she used me to try a brand new technique on? Best for you if this situation not to call for hearings. As your president, I really know how to play. As long as Hillary was out of the way, I'd never admit to anything they'd say. They'd accuse me and I'd say, no way.
But we caught you in the hallway.
It wasn't me.
Heard you did it with you all day.
It wasn't me.
What about your office desktop?
It wasn't me.
Heard the sound of your pants drop.
Uh-oh, wasn't me.
Scandal really caused a big mess.
It wasn't me.
We got to see the stained dress.
It wasn't me.
Heard the Oval Office door lock.
It wasn't me.
Heard the sound of some boots knock. Cause talking in and he caught you red-handed, creeping with the girl at work. Pictures of you with the fat intern and your wife went berserk.
How can you forget what my term did for the economy?
All we're asking for is just a bit of an apology. You should tell us you're sorry since you finally got caught.
I'm not listening cause the babes here in this crowd are so hot. I used to think that leadership mattered, but now I realize nothing matters the way women matter.
We'll be singing while you're winging. We'll be singing.
My polls go down, but they go up again. You'll never run me out of town. My polls go down, but they go up again. You'll never run me out of town. If my polls go down, but they go up again. You'll never run me out of town. My polls go down, but they go up again. You'll never run me out of town.
Dissing the right away. Dissing the right away.
I think they need to think. I think the dolls are dink. I think they really stink. They want me in the clink. You give me votes, I'll give you very good times. You give me cash, I'll give you even better times.
Boy, naughty boy.
They go up again, go down with every babe in town. My pants go down, but they go up again. Go down with every babe in town. My pants go down, but they go up again. Go down with every babe in town. My pants go down, but they go up again. Go down with every babe in town.
Kissing the night away. Kissing the night away.
First there was Jennifer, then there was Paula Jones, then there was Monica, then there was what's her name. There were the babes who could show you really good times. There were the babes who could show you even better times.
Please lie with me, White House neighbor.
Yeah, my pants go down, but they go up again. Go down with every babe in town. My pants go down, but they go up again. Except when Hillary's around, she runs this town.
And that was four selections from a special collection of the Capitol Steps. I kind of have to apologize. It's a pretty trivial, vanilla stuff, almost Republicanish stuff, although they satirize former Führer Bush. This is kind of pre-Obama stuff, and I happen to like satirical music, so... threw a little political satire on there. If I were more web savvy, or perhaps if anybody out there wants to volunteer to assist me, I'd be happy to play some more recent and hopefully harder cutting-edge stuff that goes to Obama's war criminal behavior in the last 2 years. So feel free to give a call to my off-air number, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, if you're interested in actually this project, which is the Free Radio Santa Cruz project, or a number of other projects that I'm kind of working on as I plod down the road here. A couple of those involve the Street Performers Guild, which met earlier this summer but hasn't met in the last couple months and is concerned with the issues that came up at that trial today that I was one of the defendants at, the what I call it, the Sinister Sidewalk Sing-Song case, or Sing-Song 2. Me and Robert Facer, Robert Blind Bear Facer, were accused of unreasonably disturbing noise for singing, well, for allegedly singing political songs in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz. I think I hear a knock at the door. Let me check what's going on here. It could be the FCC.
Who is it? Aha! Come in. You're on the air.
Actually, we're not on the air. We're on the stream. And entering the studio is that FCC in disguise agent, the infamous Lighthouse Linda LeMaster, who is...
does not work for the FCC.
She insists she's not an FCC undercover, and I suspect that's probably true. Linda is a longtime activist, mom, community speaker on many issues, former head of the Homeless Issues Task Force, former head of the City Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women, and also one who struggles occasionally with the equipment at Free Radio Santa Cruz. We're going to try to get her mic set up here.
He tried to bonk me with his mic.
Actually, it was the microphone that attacked you. I think it was more of a friendly gesture.
Train your mics.
So I have a number of projects which I do encourage people to want to join in on. If you want to see more about the kinds of issues I'm concerned with, you can go to the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom website, www.huffsantacruz.org. That's got a lot of stuff. A lot of it is outdated in the sense that the articles are 3 or 4 years old, but unfortunately the issues are as much alive as ever, and the repression is just as bad, if not worse, than it was 3 or 4 years ago. So you can educate yourself by going to the Huff Santa Cruz website. That's also the place where these shows, the ones that you're hearing now and the ones that you've been listening in the past that you've heard, are archived. And so if you want to go back and check some old shows out, I've done interviews with numerous people in the community, mostly around the political topics of civil rights for homeless people, or lack of civil rights for homeless people. You can go there to those particular places. And another place to go if you want to check out the kind of projects I'm involved in and that I encourage you to become involved in, hey, start your own group and invite me to help you. I mean, the more help we provide each other, the better, is Indie Media, Santa Cruz Indie Media. You can go to www.indiebay.org, www.indiebay.org. And actually, you have to go to the Santa Cruz section of that particular website. But there's a lot of recent stuff I've written about, the trials of Anna Richardson and Miguel de Leon, my own struggle with the city attorney around the issue of political songs on Pacific Avenue.
Singing and sleeping and the things people do.
And there's stuff around the Peace Camp 2010, which I'm going to be playing and talking about. So, yeah, go to santacruzindiebay.org, and you'll be able to see other kinds of issues. I tend to make a lot of Public Records Act requests, which get ignored or deflected by the city authorities, and I'm going to be talking about one of those shortly. But before I do, let me find out if Linda has any exciting updates that she may be bringing to the studio that I'm not aware of. Hey there, Linda.
No, I do not. Thank you for asking. I have had just a horrible afternoon, and I can't find Free Radio on the dial, even though I went to the trouble to have a bar.
No, it's not
so
on. We're streaming. We're not broadcasting because there's a part apparently that's got broken or wore out or something on the transmitter. We have to get it from England. This, according to our very own Uncle Dennis, who put up a story about this on indiebay.org. For those who are interested in getting his perspective, Free Radio Santa Cruz off the air again. And what does he say? Early Tuesday morning, the transmitter failed at Free Radio just a week after going back on the air. Repairs are underway, but parts may have to be ordered, so we ask our listeners to be patient. We encourage folks to listen to our live audio stream, which presumably you're either doing right now or maybe you're listening to an old, an archived version of the show. And that's freakradio.org, of course, that you're listening to if you're listening to it. And if you aren't listening to it, well, you could be. And you might again have to in the future if we go off the air again. So that's the story, Linda.
That's a bummer. So live in person is pretty good, but everybody can't do that.
Say that again?
I think coming here live in person is a pretty good privilege, but most people don't get to.
For those who are listening to this broadcast on September 9th, 2010, you can certainly call in and be a live person on the air through the phone line. The number here is 427-3772, 427-FRSC, fittingly enough, in case you want to call in and give your thoughts on anything that's happening. I am expecting a call from Drum Circle Dave, who is a regular reporter from the Wednesday Drum Circle, which has been harried and pursued around town by the police department. I think it's finally crouching along the levee path where the police are running their vehicles back and forth past it, although I understand that. I think there was a ticket issued yesterday, too, as I remember vaguely from Drum Circle Dave's account when he called in this morning, although I'm not sure what the ticket was for.
Ticket for drumming? Come on.
Don't think so. It was a ticket for maybe it was blocking the sidewalk or wheelchair without a permit, or I don't know what the latest thing was on the levee. The levee pathway and other areas are being closed down by either completely, as happened to the last site that the Drum Circle was located at, which was kind of a spacious triangular area right next to the Soquel Bridge across from CVS, previously Long's Drugs. And they were there for, 4 weeks, maybe 6 weeks. And it was sort of a nice spot to be, although people were camping nearby, and that caused some consternation by authorities. But they were far enough away from businesses and residences generally not to even give a pretext for Sergeant Harms to go running around threatening people with unreasonably disturbing noise, citation threats. So, actually, he was threatening them with citations rather than citation threats, or perhaps he was threatening them with both. But in any case, they were run off from that area by a closure of that triangular area by the Parks and Rec Department, which has great power given it in 2006 by the Rotkin Council. 2006 was another year when Rotkin was mayor. He was mayor this year, and he was mayor then, and he was mayor in 1996, and I think he was also mayor 1987 or 86, something like that. So he's been mayor a number of times. This is the recycled mayor par excellence. A very savvy politician who I've had on my show a number of times, who is quite adamant in his determination to criminalize homeless people at night for sleeping, or, as he might put it, to retain the law that gives the police the tools to deal mm-hmm. with problems at night involving camping, as he would like to say. Though camping gives the image of hot dogs and an open fire and a weekend event when you get away from the tedium of your suburban home and you go off and have a little shindig. But actually, for homeless people, it's not even a camping. There is a camping ban, of which one of the subsections is a camping essentially ban on any public property anywhere in Santa Cruz. But there's also two sections which ban sleeping at night after 11 o'clock and setting up blankets or bedding after 11 o'clock. So it's not just an attempt to reasonably regulate camping, which I think none of us would object to. But it is, in fact, a tool designed to give the police the power to criminalize homeless people. And initially, as I understand it, and again, it's kind of lost in the mist of history in 1978 when this particular codification of the law was finalized, it was initially pressed by the police department. I think that was what Bert Muley, who was then on the city council, told me. I don't think he was mayor at the time, although I had previously thought he was. But no, he's a liberal on all kinds of issues, he and his wife Lois, but not on local homeless issues, kind of similar to the pseudo-liberals of today on the city council. Any thoughts on that, Linda?
What pseudo-liberals?
What pseudo-liberals?
What up today? I mean, what
Mike
see
Rotkin.
Is
Mike
as
Rotkin,
difficult as
Mike. Mike Rotkin would call himself, I think, a liberal. He's on the board of directors of the ACLU.
Okay.
He speaks regularly as a spokesperson against the national civil liberties violations, even criticizing Fuhrer Obama on occasion.
Self-anointed liberals, then.
Right. Well, liberal on national issues, but not on local issues as far as unions and poverty and I would say civil rights regarding the police department go. They're much more conservative. In fact, pretty much part of the establishment and even further to the right as they cater to groups like Take Back Santa Cruz, the Lynn Robinson, Cynthia Matthews, Ryan Coonerty faction on city council and the upcoming, David Teresa's, Hillary Bryant group that's trying to may well likely gain greater power at city council.
The not liberals.
They are the less phony, the more explicit conservatives. Although I think they too like to pretend they have a liberal side.
Well,
it's all very fashionable in Santa Cruz because there's a large student vote.
They probably feel liberal, but they don't vote liberal. They don't act liberal. And I'm not recommending anybody does because liberal creates as many problems as it solves, but it's less likely to kill people, put them in jail, make them pay for things that they have to do anyway.
Interesting question. I don't know. I know that, yeah, I mean, it's liberals that brought us, well, there's liberals that have escalated the war in Iraq and in Afghanistan. It's liberals that escalated the war in Vietnam under LBJ. It's, you know, and also conservatives, for sure. The conservatives didn't oppose the war, and the conservatives haven't opposed the Afghanistan escalation either, with a few exceptions.
I think that those are the guys that they know they shouldn't call you crazy, so they call you a wingnut. But they don't know why they shouldn't call you crazy, why it's not appropriate, casual use. They just know it's not PC. So they just invent another fuzzy word like homelessness, wingnut in our town. It's probably spread by now.
Well, I think a lot of this has to do with the counterculture segment of the population that maybe is associated in part with the University of California, in part with just a group of people that it became a part of the scene throughout the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and remains a part of that scene. Santa Cruz is sort of one of the transit points that people use when they travel up and down the coast. And so there's a particular culture of that has broken away to some extent from the mainstream's wage slave culture, pay rent culture, work for the war machine or work for corporate America culture. And it has a certain, there's an idealism involved there, as well as perhaps a desperation and opportunism too that comes in. And this is a culture, I think, that the police, the conservative and, quote, liberal and progressive bureaucracy in Santa Cruz wants to deter from being around Santa Cruz, whether it's people that already live here, such as myself and other activists who are attempting to restore civil rights for poor people or restore the rights of street performers to perform without getting run off by a heckler's veto.
Yeah. It's like even musicians, unless they're domesticated indoor pet musicians, are being just roughshod run over. And they're using the police department in part to do it.
Yeah, and I think that there is this division and this crackdown. It's a kind of a cultural war against class segments of the society. They're being vilified and demonized as, in the old days, they were called welfare moms and they were called welfare Cadillac people and they were, you know, bums and people living, you know, sucking off the tit of the decent working class people. That was the kind of the stereotype used. Or as you would put it, you know, wingnuts and nutcases released from the mental hospital. I constantly hear that phrase, you know, as though that was a bad thing. Or
yeah, I don't mean to sound like
or a good thing
that liberal position that you might hear from Mr. Rockin and others that's where all this massive homelessness comes from. It comes from an oppressive economy that is meaner and meaner to the people who are younger and younger who want to enter the workforce.
Well, the Coalition on Homelessness says in San Francisco, and I think the National Coalition for the Homeless in Washington claims, and I think I have some sympathy with this position, that has to do with the failure to provide, to allow for affordable housing nationwide, and the withdrawal of those resources, and instead the putting of resources, or the maintaining and escalating of resources in the military and in, you know, tax breaks for the rich and in generally a degrading standard of living for working people, with the upper end getting the sauce, the gravy, and the moolah boolah.
Corporations getting money to fix the economy they broke instead of workers.
Or to continue their machinations.
I think it's time for the IWW to come back, and I hope we get some more serious committed anarchists floating through, or it's just a battleground.
Say that again, I'm sorry.
I said I feel like it's time for the industrial workers of the world to come back to life or get a solid co-op going of people who are true anarchists that can commit to that over a period of time instead
of
just
personal
use.
And, of course, they're also under attack here in Santa Cruz. The Sub Rosa Cafe, Wes Modes got found guilty in a preposterous trial in the court of Judge Almquist, Jeff Almquist, who also came up with the ridiculous decision in the Becky Johnson case that singing political songs at midday if you are disturbing a day sleeper who doesn't even advise you that he is sleeping above is a form of unreasonably disturbing noise. That's actually the same case that I am accused, the same charge that I'm accused of violating, and actually the same incident. Becky Johnson was tried separately, and I'm now being tried with Robert Facer. I'm going to talk about that case, but before I do, I want to talk about a broader issue. Well, another issue. It's both broad issues, maybe. I don't know. Which has affected particularly the Drum Circle and Peace Camp 2010 recently, but has the potential to and does affect actually everyone in Santa Cruz. That is the power of the Parks and Rec czarina, as I call her, Danette Shoemaker, and her and the bureaucrats under her to close down essentially almost any part of the public property, the commons in Santa Cruz that they want to. This was done, as I mentioned before, with a triangular area right next to the bridge at Soquel where people had gathered to play drums and were doing so successfully. People were being fed there. People were having a dialogue and communication there. People were enjoying each other's company there on a regular basis on Wednesday and actually were meeting at other times there as well. And this apparently was too much for the bureaucrats who moved to bulldoze. Well, they didn't bulldoze, but they chopped down the trees. I think they may have bulldozed, too, a little bit. They cut away all the foliage, and they spread out an area and set up a triangular do-not-cross yellow tape suggesting they had a demonstration garden where they had previously destroyed all the foliage. You know, it's sort of a one of those, you know, we destroyed the village in order to save it type statements that is so amusing in one respect and so macabre in another that the abusive authorities like to use to cover their tracks.
Maybe they want to get a job at along the Amazon.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not suggesting that, you know, necessarily they're, obviously Amazon cultures, people that actually live there are getting really swept away, but this is a sort
so
of...
So are the people who live here. It's the people who need to live here, the people whose families are born here, not the people that keep investing and folding their equity over, and now they're squawking like they've been harmed in some way because they lose property. It's the people that have to get up and go to work for those guys that are being abused to death and banished and criminalized over nothing, like dropping your gum stick.
So the... You know, I tend to, insofar as people are being criminalized who are, I think you're talking, I mean, people who are outside and who are counterculture are in that group you mentioned, for sure.
Not just the counterculture.
But I think that this is specifically designed to go after counterculture people at the Drum Circle. And this area was closed, and there were two other areas that had recently been closed. One is the city council grounds and courtyard area, which is the area around the city council chambers and so forth, which has always been open from time immemorial, as they like to say. Mike Rotkin, when he was mayor, tried to close the area at night to protest with an injunction, but he couldn't get Judge Stevens to sign off on it because there was at that time, as there is now, then there was a thing called the Santa Cruz Sleepers Vigil. Now there's a thing called Peace Camp, Santa Cruz Peace Camp 2010, which both had the same objective, which was to end the criminalization of homeless people at night for the act, the necessary act of sleeping. Rotkin wasn't able to do that, but in 2006, 10 years after that 1996 protest where he failed to shut down public space, he passed through city council during his reign a new ordinance that essentially gave the Parks and Rec boss, in this case is now Danette Shoemaker, the power to, by edict, close down a variety of areas in the city, supposedly in consultation with the Parks and Rec Commission, but no longer requiring their explicit vote, as was the case prior to 2006. And I'm going to read this this hours of operation section, but what happened was the Parks and Rec Commission, or the Parks and Rec boss, Shoemaker, closed, or it had to be done with her authorization, because she's the one who has the power to do it, according to the law. Signs were posted, as you know, at City Hall, Linda, that limited the right to be on those grounds or even in front of City Hall in the area adjacent to the sidewalk, where homeless people had been protesting by peacefully sleeping at night in civil disobedience and taking their tickets as the police came, and actually living under the glare of spotlights and a generator that was put there to try to make it less hospitable for them. But this made it so that they did have, and with those tickets, when they got them, and they haven't gone to court on them yet because there's usually a month or two delay on these tickets, they had the option of what's called a necessity defense. So they could show, as we have pointed out, and I will point out on this show later, and I'm glad you're here in the studio, Linda, because I want you to comment on it. And you were there, in fact, when we went to the Homeless Service Center's board of directors and found there's no shelter.
I told you before we went, there's no walk-in or emergency shelter
right.
in the
knew
north
that
half
too.
Of the county.
We all knew that. But the question was, would they acknowledge it, and would they issue a letter to that effect? And, of course, they don't, and they won't, because they are more interested in pandering, it seems to me, this is my opinion, and catering to the police department and the politicians and perhaps their potential funding sources among the merchants than they are in honestly coming out explicitly and saying the obvious, which they will say to you if you ask them. If you ask them individually, if you ask Daniel White individually, he's the head of the shelter program there, you know, are there any spaces? No, there haven't been any spaces since the armory closed on April 15th. And there won't be until November 15th unless you get on a waiting list and wait 4 to 6 weeks as a man, or I think it's 2 to 3 weeks as a woman. And then, you know, you can only be on for a month, then you get kicked off for a month, as I understand it from people who've tried to do that. So you would think they would have said, yeah, this is true, it's regrettable, and, you know, we hope that can be resolved. We're not necessarily, you know, bad-mouthing the police department or the city council, though they should be, of course, but that's the truth. However, as you can tell us, Linda, what your perception of what happened was when we went to that Homeless Service Center Board of Directors meeting in late August, and I made that request.
Yeah, I could mention something there. So this woman named Sally was the chair of
Sally Williams, I think.
That body, and she allowed us to present our concern, and then we were silenced with a promise of a subsequent but prompt meeting, which hasn't happened yet, by the way, to talk about it. And then Sally's contribution to what had been said, which is basically, what do we have to do to get the board to put in writing what is obviously fact? Because they couldn't get their head around it, they claimed. And they didn't have time to discuss it, even though they had no quorum to make other decisions that day.
Good point.
So Sally's addition to what we had put forward in your proposal was to do it with someone significant from the police department. Which I don't know if that's like to pass the buck or if she really wants to work out some policy, but I don't think it's a very good reason for delay. But maybe due to this several weeks that have gone by, we'll get to talk to the potential new police chief, or maybe even pick who the policeman is going to have to deal with, people like you and me.
Well, I don't see, and as I've said before, I don't think the police have anything to do with this, except that another issue that came up was Ed Fry's concern that there be a person who answers the phone every night that says, if a police officer calls in, we have no space, and the police officer would then not ticket people because he or she learned there was no space, and therefore the police officer knows that all tickets that he or she wrote would be dismissed at trial, and therefore simply a form of harassment for homeless people, requiring them to go through a process where there was an inevitable and predictable result. So that really became, I think, the deflection pretext that Sally Williams used, rather than, let's say, as you said, they didn't have a quorum. This is a fact that I was really kind of vaguely aware of, but I'm glad you brought it to my attention. Because this board didn't have a quorum, they could have informally talked about a lot of stuff.
They could have allowed 5 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, actually, they gave us about 15 minutes.
No, they gave us introductions. You spelled out what you wanted to say, and as soon as their board members started asking some questions, she cut the conversation off.
Well, I know that I had the impression she was trying to move on to other business,
yes.
But it's interesting that you point out to me, and that was really, I wasn't aware of that at the time, although I heard her say it, I guess, that they didn't have a quorum, so they couldn't do other business. So it was, in fact, not just an attempt to move the meeting along, but it was an attempt to avoid the issue or to get us out of there. And you're suggesting that there were members of the board that actually wanted to address the issue. I didn't quite get that impression.
You might have left the head of... No, you were there.
No, I heard it. But actually, I played the tape. And I have the tape with me tonight, and I may be playing some of it again so yeah. So those of us... See, well, you can comment on it as we go through. But I'm bringing this up incidentally because we're talking about the closure of the city council grounds, which was done through, as I said, an edict or administrative ruling by, I have to assume, Danette Shoemaker. She's the person who has the power to do it. And signs were posted. However, when I sent her an email in late August requesting information about this and what would, if she went to the Parks and Rec for consultation, as she's supposed to, she declined to answer that, but simply said that, and she also said she had no public records whatsoever documenting anything written around this particular decision. Actually, she said that about the closing off of the drum circle area, as I call it, the triangular area, claiming that it was just, quote, routine park maintenance. And so I sent her a follow-up email which said, good, well, give me all documents regarding routine park maintenance. Mm. And I know that we're going to go around with that one for a while. But she also claimed that the city manager's office was going to send me a response as to, I don't know why that would be the case, because she's the person that actually has the authority to close down City Hall grounds at night. And I'm going to read that in just a moment, to read the actual text of the law for those who aren't familiar with it. It's, for those who have a computer, I guess maybe everybody listening at this point, it's 13.04.011, 13.04.011 hours of operation on the under Chapter 13.04, access and use. Under Title 13, Parks and Recreation of the Santa Cruz Municipal Code. And I'm going to read that so people can judge themselves whether I'm whistling Dixie, as we say. And the same thing, I asked her the same question regarding the library, where suddenly signs have appeared. The city council courtyard, or the entire city council grounds closing area, is closed from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. And the library is even worse. There's a sort of a small 4 or 5 foot area bordering the sidewalk, which includes a number of benches where people, homeless people particularly, sit during the day and at night as well, and sometimes sleep there, which are now closed 9 p.m. to 9 a.m. Which you know, Linda, because you've been one of the brave
idiots.
Souls. Well, call it what you
will.
I've
been a fool, but
this
is important.
Who's been sleeping in your vehicle illegally, I might add. Get
everyone,
this woman
so
immediately
too.
In solidarity with the Peace Camp 2010 people, who last night, I understand, had 6 to 7 people sleeping there, by the way.
And,
go,
and the
Peace
night
Camp
before,
2010. Only
the
two,
night before,
only
there
two
were
or three.
Six when the cops came
no,
in.
No, that was the night before the night before.
2 nights before.
Yes. There were six that you called me about, and I came down and actually talked to, and I may have some actual audio that I'm playing today. That was on, today is the 9th, so be the 7th, I believe. And on the morning of the 7th, the night of the 6th. And then on the night of the 7th and 8th, which is night before last, there were only 2 or 3 people. I went down there and I found Gary and Colette sleeping, and I found Robert Facer sitting pondering things. I think he was illegally sitting on the wall, and I didn't want to write him a ticket. He's such an old, respectable guy. But last night, I understand, although Gary was rather abrupt with me when I asked him again to give me more details, he said there were 6 or 7. He was very pleased that a lot of people had returned, some of them new, to the Peace Camp 2010 sleepout, which is now happening. I don't know how it happened last night, but you brought to my attention, Linda, that it was happening with people lined up along the sidewalk, the very narrow sidewalk. They can't sleep, you know, across the street. That's illegal. They can't sleep on the red brick area of the City Hall anywhere more. That's illegal. They can't sleep anywhere in Santa Cruz. That's illegal. But so they've lined up on the sidewalk to sleep. And I guess there was a first citation issued, beware, Linda, for sleeping in a vehicle. That happened
last night?
Night before last, I believe.
Oh. Was it one of the peace campers?
The night before the night before last. I think you actually contacted me 3 nights ago rather than 2 nights ago. Or maybe it was 4 nights ago. But
last night
it gets
I
a little
left
confusing.
At midnight. I usually try to make sure I'm there between 5 and 8:30 in the morning. Because when they send the cops, there's usually a batch of them, so it really deserves a
witness. I'll inform our new police chief, Kevin Vogel, about that.
Thanks, Robert.
Well, he needs to
there
know
goes
the
my
kind
car.
His opposition, yes. So,
and I'll just have to sleep on the sidewalk, too, if that happens.
Well, the point here, and all these issues do interrelate, is I want to make the citizenry and the community generally aware, citizen or not, of the reality of the powers that are suddenly, that for the last 4 years, but not used except in the Poganip. I believe it was used to close down the Poganip as well, which is a pretty huge area to close down. The heroin menace, the drug war. They've got all kinds of, spooky things they can pull out to frighten people and use to increase police power. And suddenly they're funding 8 new police officers downtown. Suddenly we've got first alarm security guards walking up and down Pacific Avenue. In fact, I got a call yesterday from curb hugger Chris, who was at his usual soliciting spot where he spare changes right outside Borders. He's 50 feet away from an ATM, or a change-making machine, 14 feet away from a crosswalk, 14 feet away from a building, 14 feet away from a bench, all these new forbidden zones created by Catherine Byers and Don Lane and the rest of the Santa Cruz City Council in January of 2009. And some of them earlier by Ed Porter and Emily Riley and that gang in 2002. And a first alarm security guard came up to him and said, "You can't sit here anymore." Well, most people would say, yes. How low should I have been? Where do I lick? Where do I lick?
Or they just run.
Or they just say, "Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Three bags full." Chris is not that kind of guy, and he said, "No, I have a right to be here. Go talk to the police." And so the security guard called the police, and this was upsetting Chris. He called me up to essentially dramatize to the first alarm security that he was talking publicly on this issue, and that he might. I don't know if I was able to record that. I don't think I had a tape recorder handy at the time, and Chris didn't stay on the line long enough. But eventually, I think one of the hosts came along, and they've decided that we're living in this little land of technicalities. Though it's illegal to be 14 feet from a corner or 14 feet from an intersection, is it illegal to be 14 feet from a rounded intersection? Because that's what the area in front of Borders at Soquel and Pacific is. And Chris and the police and the hosts had all decided it was legal to be there, even if you were less than 14 feet from some point along that curved area that is the corner, because there really is no corner there. Mm-hmm. Instead, it was to be measured from the crosswalk. But this first alarm security guard took it into his head that he was going to decide otherwise. Now, I don't really know the ultimate outcome, but I suspect Chris won that battle, or I would have heard a further call. But it's an example of how these laws created by the city council become the pretext for control fetish behavior by young vigilante police officers, hosts, or first alarm downtown business improvement district types, because that's what this is, a private security force, essentially cooked up by the city, the Santa Cruz Police Department, and the Downtown Association. Hang on just a second, Linda. And that being the case, go ahead.
I'm sorry, I messed up your thought, but I wanted to share with your listeners. I was watching the news at a mutual friend's house yesterday, and they had a primary piece of news from, I don't know if it's Channel 9 or 46, one of those kind, about hiring first alarm with the equivalent of one cop's salary, as if that were a
$5,000 a month
way to figure out how to put uniforms everywhere.
Yeah, it's an attempt to intimidate people on the cheap. And it's done by other cities. It's picked up from other business districts who essentially want to privatize the sidewalks.
And have. With a few stalwarts like Chris, they have. In this town, if it's going to open up to be for all the people that live in the county and not just the ones that the merchants think they can hawk and hustle, it's going to have to be a struggle, because Parks and Recs, the police department, people out of line from their role as part of a city council body they've all taken it over. The merchants don't think it's anybody's but theirs on the mall if you talk to them.
Well, it certainly seems to be looking that way, given, for example, this trial today of myself and Robert Facer, where the issue was one resident wanted us to stop singing and playing. We actually did stop singing and playing, and we wanted to find out, we wanted to continue because we were doing a political protest involving the song, which regular listeners have heard many a time, Downtown, with homeless lyrics. And we wanted to know how loud we could play it to continue, and the police officer refused to tell us and instead insisted that she essentially prompted Riley and used Riley as a shield to initiate this citation process, which actually froze protests by Huff.
We've
had a couple since then, but it certainly are, they've been way cut back. And, you know, it also was a way of stopping that particular protest, because a citation for unreasonably disturbing noise is not only a $445 bail, which means you don't get jailed for it, but unless you pay that, you want to solve the ticket completely, you just immediately got to kick down $445. If you don't do that, you have to go to court. And to go to court, of course, requires appearing numerous times. And if you're a working person, this can be very difficult, particularly if you're a falsely accused working person, as one of those accused, Michelle Doiko, was. Her name came up in trial today. The point being that a resident can be a heckler and cut and shut down stuff on the public sidewalk that he shouldn't be able to do. But, I mean, that would be more in line with, let's say, if it was private property, then the owner of the private property would have much greater say in what went on that property. But on the sidewalk, the merchants are supposed to be required to eat it if they don't like what's going on the sidewalk, provided it's not illegal. That should not be something that they can shut down, likewise with residents. But as you said, I think that we have seen increased privatization happening. Now, again, what the actual ordinance says under which Danette Shoemaker has closed down at least, I think we're talking at least four areas, City Hall, courtyard area, library grounds, and all both of these at night, 24 hours a day, this little garden, this area which has been designated a garden area next on the along the levee path next to the Soquel Bridge, previously used by the Drum Circle, and then the whole Poganip area closed at night. Now, what this, I'm going to read this 13.04.011. The Parks and Recreation Director, and that's Danette Shoemaker, may by regulation establish hours during which any park road, park trail, grounds, building, or facility is open to the general public. Said hours shall be established for the purpose of protecting park properties, park roads, park trails, and other areas from acts of vandalism and to prohibit the general public from engaging in unlawful activities. See, that's the pretext perhaps for, although we don't know what it is because she refused to respond to my Public Records Act request asking, show me why you did this, or tell me why you did this, which she still hasn't done. Closed down City Hall grounds, closed down the library grounds. It seems to be because there were protesters there at night who were sleeping publicly and illegally. But she doesn't want to say that because it's clearly an attack on public protest and the right to assembly, and doesn't fly well with the community, or at least some aspects, or we would hope it wouldn't fly well.
It absolutely is in response to the fact that there were people there at night. Whether they will admit it or not doesn't mean it's not blatantly obvious.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Continuing with this particular code section, these provisions shall be applicable to all park properties, park roads, park trails, and other areas under the jurisdiction and control of the Parks and Recreation Director. This is the sentence that really gets me. For purposes of this chapter, the area under the jurisdiction and control of the Parks and Recreation Director encompasses, without limitation, all city parks and green belts, all city parks, trails, and roads, all city parks, facilities, and buildings, including Lighthouse Field State Beach, De La Vega Golf Course, Main Beach, Cowles Beach, Steamer Lane, Harvey West Pool, the Beach Flats Community Center, the Loudon Nelson Community Center, the Teen Center, the Civic Auditorium, City Hall Courtyard, Mission Plaza, the Town Clock, the Natural History Museum, the Surfing Museum, Santa Cruz Municipal Wharf, Pacific Avenue,
Oh, so not only have the merchants decided to run it, but the city's decided to make it a park so they can turn it over more easily to the desires of them.
It sounds like that could
That's
be
not,
one.
Oh,
Westcliff Drive.
Chuck Abbott in his grave is dissolving.
That was the fellow who designed
the old downtown garden mall,
when it was a garden mall and not a concrete merchant addendum. Continuing, Pacific Avenue, Westcliff Drive, Pelton Street to Swanton Boulevard, the San Lorenzo River levee and bike path, the San Lorenzo benchlands, the inner banks of the San Lorenzo River within the city limits, the Brancaforte and Carbonera creeks within the city limits, Jesse Street Marsh, plus any other facility or areas assigned to the Parks and Recreation Department by the city manager. The Parks and Recreation Commission, and this is where I again asked her what was going on, and the San Lorenzo River Committee, as appropriate, shall be consulted to obtain input on any proposed modifications to the hours of operation of parks and open spaces. And frankly, I am very suspicious that there was no such consultation because there have been no meetings of the Parks and Rec Commission that I'm aware of.
Maybe they sent them a letter. They sent themselves a letter, since they're the staff for the commission.
They're the staff for the commission, but they're not the commission. The commission is an admittedly appointed body by the Gang of Seven, the city council, as I used to call them 20 years ago, and probably should again call them. Gang of Seven used to have a different meaning because back in 1989, the Gang of Four was the group of Chinese leaders in the 60s and 70s, including Madame Mao, who was being denounced as a group of renegade leaders. But so the Gang of Seven was an amusing way of describing the Santa Cruz City Council. But all these areas in 13.04.011 are essentially up for grabs. And have been grabbed by the Parks and Rec Department. And it's amazing. I mean, I'm kind of...
I bet Public Works is relieved.
I'm left flapping my gums here. I mean, I don't know. I'm kind of, you know, babbling in the corner. It's kind of...
Well, we have a situation, Robert. You know, I mean, you know that what I know something about is how the wonder of people who survive without means or with little means. But right now in the town, there's this anxiety, and I think some of these leaders feathering it into being fear about gangs shooting people off the street and in the parks. There's a real fear among the involved citizenry, I mean, to the extent you get to be involved. And it's like opportunism.
Yeah, I mean, it's an election time. They got prostitutes. They used prostitutes. There's war on drugs, war on gangs, war on terror. I mean, you name it. It's...
War. The worst of recession, the more we're going to hear these war words. Conflict.
Yeah, it's a way of, they're trying to mobilize the community to support the various repressive measures that they want to take. And they don't have any money as well, so this is another kind of additional factor. They're trying to do it on the cheap.
That's what's going to break their back about getting away with this.
I hope so. I hope something breaks their back. Perhaps you can help. How can we break the back of this? Essentially, it's a form of tyranny, in my view.
You won't like my answer.
And you can give a call to 427-3772 if you'd like to chime in your thoughts. 427-3772. You're listening to the stream of Free Radio Santa Cruz. And in the studio with me is Linda LeMaster. I'm Robert Norris. And you are yet to identify yourself, so call in and sign in. You have something you wanted to add, Linda?
I think the only thing that's going to turn this back is a groundswell of diverse people saying, hey, this is our town, too, and getting support from outside the town, from people who used to like to vacation here, and checking in with the UCSC students so they don't get destroyed and criminalized before they even get oriented and adapted to living here. Like the kind of reaction that this town almost instantaneously developed when the SIT law was passed. That's what will give us our county seat and our town back, and I can't imagine anything short of that. And a few good ideas coming in with the presence of active citizens might be helpful.
Well, you know, I don't think, unfortunately, the 1994 protests against the sitting ban, which did turn that back briefly, back in May of 1994, did not come as a spontaneous reaction. There were months of organizing, begun by the Santa Cruz Union of the Homeless with Lotus Maynard and
me.
And yourself and Kim Margula. The new Food Not Bombs with Tony Mello and Skidmark Bob and Kim Margula and others. The Coalition to Decriminalize Poverty with
a couple
of other activists.
They worked hard, but you can't call me a liar on the air without getting a reaction.
Yeah.
It moved from 100 to 400 people in 3 days people started sitting and being arrested instantly.
I think there were, people actually, the city screwed up in that one. The people began, and people did protest in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz, where then Mayor Neil Coonerty, who's now our supervisor and then was on the council and the kind of the leading force behind this essential privatization deal of the downtown ordinances that, set up all the forbidden zones, actually much smaller forbidden zones in those days than now. But the sitting law was pretty universal. They had a very broad sitting law that said you can't sit down in any street at all, period, unless, it's an emergency or you're in a wheelchair or you're watching a parade or something, and then you can do it. And people did some protests, and the police ignored the protests in front of the bookshop, and it seemed to mellow out. Then when Food Not Bombs was feeding people in front of what was the old Ford's department store, and now is Taqueria Vallarta.
It was an empty lot.
And it was at that time an empty lot where the farmer's market was actually held on Wednesdays. And Food Not Bombs have been, I think, feeding there quite regularly. The merchants sort of, and the police, and I don't have particular recollection that the merchants were behind it, but they didn't like Food Not Bombs, and I suspect they had their fingers in the pie here. Downtown Association, when I say the merchants, I mean the conservative organ of the merchants. Police began arresting or citing Food Not Bombs workers and for feeding people, not under a food claim that was some sort of unhealthy food or it was illegal to do that. We'd fought that battle successfully several years before, activists had.
Especially Linda Edwards.
On the claim that people were sitting down on the sidewalk. And so the next week, on May 11th, hundreds of people showed up. And it was organized. I remember massively calling people and we were putting out a flyer every day. So it wasn't like it happened as a spontaneous response at all, in my view.
But it swelled suddenly.
But
when it got out in the commercial media, the numbers just swelled. It really did.
I don't know,
some of the organizers were prepared for that.
That's not really my yeah, I understand that's your perception. It's not mine.
I was there.
Yeah. Well, I was there.
I got taken in the paddy wagon.
We were both there.
I didn't have ID, and they wanted to get rid of me anyway.
Yeah, that doesn't mean
we have
a difference of
again.
Perception on this, which is fine. There's no problem. So, in any case, the issue is, that things have gotten markedly worse, and now is justified by a series of legal covers like this. This ordinance. The positive aspect is that the Peace Camp 2010 is continuing. And drawing new people who recognize that the sleeping ban in Santa Cruz is something that cannot be allowed to stand without protest. And let me play now, since you're here, and I've been talking about it with you and encouraging you to come into the studio to talk about it, the Homeless Service Center Board of Directors meeting where you and I and Ed Fry came and spoke to Sally Williams, who is the head of the board of directors, and also Monica Martinez, who is the executive director, and I think is the executive director of the Homeless Service Center, which, for those who don't know, is an organization that is a cover group for the Paul Lee Loft, which is the only really short-term shelter in Santa Cruz of any size, the Rebelle Family Shelter, the Paul Page Smith Community House, a transitional program, the River Street Shelter, and I think the Homeless Persons Health Project.
No, that's a county project, but they do collaborate.
Right, they are sort of on the same grounds.
But they're not under that board, Homeless Services Center.
Right, and I think that's important because actually I've heard people getting the shaft at the Homeless Service Center, going over to the Homeless Persons Health Project and getting treated well. So that's interesting. So you had a comment you wanted to make before I begin?
Yeah, the Page Smith is a transitional shelter. So it's not really like short-term, per se. It's like impermanent. Some people might get up to a year and a half, I understand. I mean, if they can stand it that long.
That was my point. The only short-term shelter is the Paul Lee Loft. That's the point I was making.
And
it has 48 beds. And you have homeless people ranging. I've always estimated 1,500 to 2,000 homeless, but even if you take a smaller number, it's a small fraction of the homeless people even have the option to show up at that shelter. And they don't have the option unless they're willing to wait 4 to 6 weeks now if they're male. And so they don't have any options at all.
And that's mostly the Loft, although probably...
I'm talking about the Loft.
Oh. Well, I'm talking about the transitional housing, Paige Smith.
Well, I was mentioning that the other housing programs require other things. They're not shelters in the sense that you can go there for a legal place to sleep. That's not a legal place to sleep. It's a place to get into a program which involves more elaborate activity. So,
and more of a commitment and fewer of your normal civil or housing rights.
And the point is, if you're talking about the sleeping ban in Santa Cruz, if you're going to make the argument that, oh, they've got a place to go, why are they sleeping out in public? They don't have a place to go, and then therefore there's no right to ticket them. In fact, it's stupid to ticket them because the tickets will be, we assume, until the courts get even worse, thrown out by the necessity defense.
And you know what? It's appropriate, I think, to celebrate that among several accomplishments of the peace campers, because nobody at the city council, public level, the electeds, knew there's no shelter. They just kept saying things that were true more than 10 years ago until the campers made sure the question kept coming up.
The campers and the Huffsters associated with the campers.
Absolutely. And other allies like Housing Now and Santa
Cruz. Huff is, of course, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, a group that I have been pushing for years, and hopefully we'll continue to push. We haven't met in months, but who knows? We may meet again one of these days. If you're interested in Huff, give a call to the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. If you want to join this conversation, if you're listening on September 9th, 2010, today, you can call in 427-3772, 427-3772. This is the stream of Freak Radio at freakradio.org, also known as Free Radio Santa Cruz. Now what I'm going to play, Linda, is the most of the interaction that we had with the Homeless Service Center's Board of Directors. I think it was 2 weeks ago, more or less. And you're going to... I think most of it is audible. If at some point you want to stop and talk, let me know, and we'll interrupt and stop the tape.
Thank you.
We've actually played this before. I've given my commentary on it before. So I'm going to actually let you make some commentary and try to keep my comments to a minimum, which is going to be rather difficult for me.
We'll see what minimum means.
Yes.
I'm
just going to begin to introduce. This is Ed Fry speaking. Sorry for the early garble here.
I organized the protest on July 4th at the courthouse. And
I think that this tape recorder is having battery problems, so I'm going to try it in another tape recorder, and maybe we'll get a better... Let's see here. Yeah, I think that is better, so let's see how we're doing.
July the 4th at the courthouse. That is to say, I actually defended homeless people in the court. And I joined them in the protest. That is to say, I actually organized the protest beginning July the 4th at the courthouse. And we're ongoing now at City Hall. And I keep running into this propaganda, really, is what I call it, that there are plenty of shelters available or people will just take advantage.
Hi. Have a seat. This is Mr. Ed Fry, who's been introduced, and he's an attorney in town who's defending homeless people and regarding Tampa Dan and organized the protest of the city council.
And that's Sally Williams speaking.
No. Ed's back here.
Okay. Ed, we'll go around the room after you say why you're here and introduce ourselves, but go ahead.
Sure.
I just want to try to dispel the myth that's going on. In fact, that the latest manifestation was at the city council candidates forum yesterday, where the thought is, or the propaganda is, that there are plenty of shelter spaces if these lazy homeless people would just go looking for them and take advantage of all the wonderful services that are available. But I listened last Friday to the testimony of Paul Brindell, who is one of the more knowledgeable people, as you all know, about homeless availability of shelters. And he very clearly testified that there is almost never an opening for shelters at night. So I want to encourage you all to please help us dispel this myth that these people are just out there and wanting to protest rather than sleep.
Sir.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Robert Norris, and I work with a group called HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And I supported Ed and others when they decided on July 4th to begin this. Essentially, it was a safe zone at the county building in order to allow homeless people who weren't, because of various reasons, either eligible to come into shelter or just because you had no shelter on those particular nights, to be able to use the area safely. And they were for about a month until the police started cracking down. But I'm also, as you probably know, because I'm sure many of you are longtime community members, I'm an opponent of the law that criminalizes homeless people at night, because almost invariably there's no shelter for at least a majority of the homeless people outside, even if they wanted it. So my concern has been, I was here about a week ago bringing some individuals to speak to Daniel White, who's, I guess, your shelter manager. And he readily agreed that between April 14th or 15th and November 15th, there was no shelter, unless you got on a waiting list, which lasted 4 to 6 weeks, and then you might get in. You know, at a certain point, if you were allowed, you could get into that on that list. But that generally, on any particular night, for a person walking in, there was no shelter in the Paul Lee Loft. And I asked him if he could just simply to write a two-sentence statement to that effect, because not only did he tell me and two witnesses that, but he swore it under penalty of perjury in the court proceeding. It was actually Thursday, in the cases of Anna Richardson and Miguel de Leon, the two homeless musicians the city is trying to criminalize in a very severe way for sleeping downtown. He didn't want to do that because he felt some authority was needed from either this board or perhaps from his superior Nancy or perhaps from you, Monica, I'm not sure. So I came here in the hopes of just getting you to say, look, it's no big deal. We'd like to provide more shelter. We are providing some shelter, but we acknowledge that between April 15th and November 15th in this shelter here, we have a waiting list that's 4 to 6 weeks long, and generally on any night there's no place for a person to get in. That's what I'm looking for tonight, and that's why I'm here. And also, the reason I'm recording is I'm a free radio Santa Cruz broadcaster who is trying to get this information out to the community, and it's really hard to do because you have conflicting media who like to, as Ed say, present the illusion, or they have the misconception that there is shelter for people every night, enough shelter, and they're just, you know, being recalcitrant and not going to it. Some people are, it's true, but I would say in general, it's generally agreed there isn't enough shelter, as Paul Brindell, and I'm sure as your board knows. So that's why I'm here. Thanks.
So that was my presentation. Linda, you have some thoughts on that.
Yeah, as you're saying that, I wanted to throw in something specific to Peace Campers. Most of the people there are already clients at that shelter, and they know everything comes with a long waiting list. Even a chance to wash your clothes has to be by appointment. So I'm sitting there in that meeting, and it's just absurd. That's all.
What's absurd?
This city's police, this city's requirement that the police try to enforce and implement that, and that came into focus after we went to this meeting, that you have to go there and already be on their list before they're going to give you a letter saying there was no shelter that night after you get a ticket. I mean, it's like absurdity on top of catch 22.
It's not a police requirement. It is a requirement.
I'm saying the police are the enforcers here.
However, and the police are not, see, I think we have had this discussion off air. To focus on the police here is a mistake. It's the board that is making choices even as we sat in the room. They could have said, oh, yeah, sure, we'll write you a letter. I mean, our man Dan White says that every day. We're not going to claim he's a liar. I mean, he's telling the truth. Here's your letter. You know, they could have done that, and that would have been that. But no, they didn't write that letter. And then they said, well, let's confer with the police. What the fuck do the police have to do with any of this? I mean, it's true, it would be helpful if the police would agree not to issue tickets, which they won't, on evenings when the homeless service centers say they're full, which is every night between March 15th and April 15th and November 15th. But it really is a way of diverting. And as I said, as you said, and I think you brought to my attention, they didn't even have any reason not to talk about this because they weren't even in a formal meeting. They had no quorum, so they didn't need to go by the rules of, you know, requiring 72-hour notice or whatever their particular, you know, nonprofit rules
agenda
were. They could have talked about it informally, and they did not. And this was instead a control action by Sally Williams to, first of all, I think, to isolate it into another area, to, you know, put it under the aegis of the police department and deflect it there, and then also to delay the discussion. And essentially she succeeded. I mean, we
yes
were trying to be,
yes,
as usual, I was trying to be the nice guy. I mean, people sort of think I'm some sort of a bad boy and a mean character and, you know, a big disruptor, but I'm not. You know, I mean, I'm, you know, if I were a big disruptor, I would have said, you know, we'll be back tomorrow with 15 homeless people and the media, which is what, by the way, Curb Hugger Chris suggested we do a month ago,
mm-hmm,
that we go directly to the Homeless Service Center, demand that they give us a letter, and if they don't, get the media to document that they're refusing to state what they said the previous day was the
what
case.
What their staff says to people every day.
Right, and what they said under oath in court. So it is, it's something, we're actually kind of a bunch of nice guy weenies, and that was one of the reasons that when you and I talked about setting up this meeting, I found myself thinking, I don't want to go to a meeting with Sally Williams, which is essentially a diversion. It reminds me a little bit of the meetings that you held week after week, month after month in 1999 and 2000 as chair of the Homeless Issues Task Force, which, by the way, came up with some good stuff.
And but, which you came to, even though I know you didn't
I
want to.
Which I also came to like an idiot. Instead of, you know, saying, this is ridiculous, let's press on with trying to actually change the law directly through the mass protest that we have actually been able to get lots of people involved in, including at that time Emily Riley, who since has gotten so bad that I don't even want to talk about her on the air, but probably will.
Yeah, well, we do need to do what you just said, get a lot of people more aware of what's going on so that those who have a conscience can begin to act in concern.
Well, the point is we do that by not letting us be tricked into these little sideshows, these diversions that these groups set up. I mean,
well,
I think that Jane...
I disagree.
I think
that we need to have people who can do that, like attorney Ed Fryer, paralegal Ray Glockrunite, doing it in order for when the people become the groundswell that will be heard, which is what it takes to be heard, they will have the support, that large group of people getting to know each other will have the support they need. And we need to know who's who, just the same way you go to the downtown merchants club or whatever it's called, and you know the people that are the chair from year to year. We need to monitor these bureaucrats and these electeds and the people that have the money that belongs to the people that are getting
compliments.
That's
nice, but the trouble is that you don't have the energy to do it all. And if you
choose
to do one, then you often don't choose to do the other. So all the energy that you put into the Homeless Issues Task Force, as I called it at the time, in 1999 and 2000, and the energy that you and Ed and maybe Kate Wells are going to put into this meeting with Sally Williams could be used in some other way. Now, if it isn't going to be used in some other way, and actually for you and Ed it is, because you and Ed are putting in yeoman service or yo woman service or yo person service.
Yo
service at the Peace Camp 2010. Ed brings the porta potty every night. You're there monitoring and reporting on tickets.
Yeah, but Robert, I don't think the best use of my being a part of this fabric of this community and county and having been active for more than 35 or 40 years in different ways in this community is best served by sleeping out on the cement with people who are forced to do it. I have to be there because the community isn't responding yet. Somebody has to be there, I feel.
Right. Well, my point, though, is that if you also have to run around to 100 little stupid meetings that aren't really going anywhere and that are a diversion, it would be better if you and Ed and I organized a group of Peace Camp 2010 people, called the media, and marched over to the Homeless Service Center and said,
it would be,
give us the letter. And we should have done this last month, and we haven't.
So, touché,
you know,
person.
And so there. So anyway, any other thoughts before we continue listening to the Homeless Service Center Board of Directors meeting where I attempted to get them to issue the letter that said, we ain't got no space, Mr. Rotkin, Mr. Martin Bernal, city manager, Mr. Kevin Vogel, police chief, acting police chief?
Yeah, I do. I want to put something out that won't be stated on the tape, but for your listeners, I'm recruiting here.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that the assumption that the homeless ghetto campus where the Homeless Services Center and other programs have been put on the corner of, what is that, Highway 9 and 1?
Coral Street.
On Coral Street. It's presumed that they're going to be the front point man for people coming in and out of a shelter system that doesn't exist. And that's been presumed, I guess, because they get their money directly from the hand of the city, where most of the other programs that help actual street homeless goes through a counseling filter or a doctoring filter. And it's just been, you know, I don't even think that went past the city attorney like I do some of these other stupid policies that he had his finger in it. I think it's just...
What didn't go past the city attorney?
Assuming that the Homeless Services Center or one of their, or some of their lead programs where people enter into the shelter system should therefore be the one and only when it comes to whether there's shelter or not. If a person has looked for shelter, you know, maybe they call churches instead of nonprofits or governments. If a person has looked for shelter and there isn't any and they've been diligent, I don't think it matters what waiting list you're on.
Well, yeah, the point, though, is that it's much easier for there to be one shelter that people try to get, particularly the publicly funded one.
It could
not,
be.
Wait a minute, not the church shelter, but the, you know, which also can involve certain other restrictions and qualifications that might be anathema to some people. They may not want to do it.
But they all do.
But
they
the fact of the matter is it's actually easier for homeless people if there is only one shelter that they get turned away from, and that, you know, is the basis for the necessity defense in court, which it is. I mean, you know, Kim Basket and...
I take issue with
and,
that.
And previously, I know you do, previously... the two judges in Departments 1 and 2, Deneen Guy, I think, and Ariadne Simons, agreed that if they got a letter from the Homeless Service Center saying the shelter was full, they'd dismiss citations. So it actually makes it easier. If you have to call some private organization, if you have to call every single shelter in town before you can, you know, you shouldn't even have to do that if it is acknowledged, as, for example, the Jones decision back in 2006 pointed out in Los Angeles. You shouldn't have to call shelters to determine if they're full or not. If it's generally understood that there's, you know,
yeah,
completely inadequate shelter services, and you're very unlikely to get a place. The idea that you should have to do that in any way is ridiculous. The idea that you should have to be on a waiting list, which is something that you pointed out to me, you claim, and I'm still looking for your documentation, was a change in the policy that was prompted by the sleeping ban protests of Peace Camp 2010. Previously, that they would give anybody, any homeless person who came in, a letter that said, you're telling me...
No, what I was trying to say to you is, previously, you could get on the waiting list when you went in to pick up your letter. It was enough. They could claim they were serving you and validate the money they get because they gave you that letter. Now, they said, since we went to that board meeting, you have to already be on the waiting list before you come to us with your citation. Now, hopefully that doesn't mean go away and come back.
Now, what we were saying, of course, is by the letter that they give now, we're not talking about the letter that we requested, which said no shelter at all between this period, a letter that we hoped homeless protesters and non-protesters could put on their sleeping bags and just say to the cop, here's a letter, we got no shelter, you want to ticket us, you may end up in court yourself for damages if you cause us any problems because we've got no legal place to go. The Homeless Service Center refused to give that letter. The letter they do give is now, as I understand it, Linda, and from Monica Martinez, the executive director, who said this at this meeting, if you are previously on our waiting list the night that the officer writes you a ticket, then we will write you a letter if we were full that night, saying we were full. But if you weren't on our waiting list that night, we won't write you a letter. You get on our waiting list now, which you said previously the policy was, I guess, did you have to agree to get on the waiting list to get the letter?
I'm just comparing what Daniel said to what the
letter. Did you have to agree to get on the waiting list in order to get the letter for the previous time or not? Or do you know?
My position is, and Daniel confirmed it when we talked to him, that you didn't have to be on the waiting list. They put you on the waiting list when they give you the there's no space form letter directed specifically
suppose
to your
you
citation.
Suppose you said you didn't want to get on the waiting list. Did they still give you the letter?
I think they would then, and somebody told them not to after Sally called around or something.
Yeah, but again, you don't really know for sure.
I see that the policy has changed in this subtle but significantly barring way.
And in other words, the policy has changed from you previously didn't have to be on the waiting list on the date. Now you do, and you say this because of the conversation you have with Daniel White.
No, that that was the policy already. I mean, I've been talking to homeless people for 30 years. That was what they did. What Daniel said seemed to me when we went in there together with could have been a client for them, exactly was what I get feedback from people and what they've said to me and what I picked up at the continuum of care meetings. It was exactly like that. Like coming there counted as, oh, now you're a client because you're on our property and you could get the letter. Now you have to previously be on a waiting list. Even if you're already a client in some other capacity, because they have a lot of different services.
So in other words,
by the way.
Mm-hmm. In other words,
legal shit.
In other
words,
you think the policy changed? This is not in other words, but you think you said previously that you think this policy changed as a consequence of the protests?
Either that or our visit there. So yeah. Just like the library suddenly gets mean about those, smoking when you walk by and staying, just like this, suddenly even the brick lip of the park can't be rested on. Just like everywhere anybody goes, it's trying to show these kind of stupid contradictions and restrictions on something that should belong to the public. They're tightening it. They're making their bottleneck in terms of homeless people accessing services for homeless people smaller by making this policy saying you have to already be on our waiting list.
Shall we hear more of this?
I think so. I think Monica's coming up.
Yeah.
Hi. I understood you were just asking for introduction. So my name is Linda Lima.
This is you, Linda, speaking, although it's kind of hard to hear you.
Yes. And I've been involved with trying to help homeless people for over 30 years, including trying to help some of the programs that you now steward get started, and including the River Street Shelter similarly, and including a lot of street activism too. And I'm here to listen. I'm concerned about the same thing Robert was talking about and Ed kind of alluded to, that things can be transparent so that people in public office or working for a television station and shooting from the hip and with 15 minutes to figure out their stories aren't reinforcing the stereotypes that are dangerous, and so that people like us can get cleaner, clearer information out. Because I've seen homeless people stand at a phone, a pay phone back when we had more, and call everywhere and never, you know, so-called referral numbers. Get an after machine on everyone, not even late at night, but it's been a late afternoon. I know we could do better, and I know one of the phrases is for a lot of people with different experiences to put their heads together. Also, I'm interested in your work. I haven't been to one of those meetings for a long time.
Let me pause here a moment, Linda, because first of all, do you have any thoughts on anything you said that you think you want to?
Yeah, I think I made a bad tactical mistake, and I appreciate that you were there as a lesson for me to reflect on. When they said introduce yourself, I thought they meant introduce ourselves. But the only time we had to talk was when they allowed us to introduce ourselves, so you're having put the problem out very concretely worked, and what I said was a waste of time. Thank you. Remember that I said thank you to you once.
Well, I don't think that was a waste of time. I think you raised a number of points about waiting lists and problems that homeless people had. And again, this is a board of people which, at least some of them, I would assume in a way, all of them, at least in the privacy of their own homes, because none of them are homeless as far as I know, think of themselves as advocates for and supporters of homeless people, although they may not be willing to stand up on the issues of civil liberties because that is touchy and may involve, you know, compromising their funding sources and antagonizing merchants and, you know, crossing politicians and pissing off the cops. So, but still, I think their own image of themselves is they're homeless supporters. And so when you raise these issues in the way you do, I think you do a good service. You get them to start listening.
But it's hard, Robert, because I can't get behind these people that think there's good homeless and bad homeless. And a lot of the charity models of social services and nonprofit networks, you know, like they have their pets and they start thinking whether they mean to or not, whether they know better or not. Like Well, these are the good homeless. They bend when we say bend. They show up right on time for dinner, no matter what could be going on, whether they have a life or not. And so those outside must be the bad homeless. And we have to get, all of us Americans have to get past demonizing 9/10 of the fucking displaced population in this country. And this is one place we have to do that with. So it's really hard for me to appreciate them as much as they deserve, because I'm afraid they're going to do this charity thing on me.
Well, I don't appreciate them at all. I think they're, you know, dead in the head what's the proper word? Guarded in the heart and misled in the mind and everything else because of their behavior for the last two decades on this board. I don't see any members of this board speaking out on these issues. I don't see any members of this board coming down to the Peace Camp 2010.
It's not an activist.
With one exception. I remember Doug Loisel showed up at homeless protests before he was fired. Now, he wasn't fired because he showed up at homeless protests, because of personal problems he had in Los Angeles, legal problems.
I read that in the paper, but I wonder how that happened to air. That sounds like you going to jail for bagels. I think there's a whisper campaign up and down the coast. Because Doug was a fine employee until he actually cared about homeless people as a whole group.
Well, some of his policies apparently have been retained by Monica Martinez, previously by Letitia Schwartz, although maybe not. I hadn't heard they've changed. One is the 24-hour bathroom that they have out at the Homeless Service Center, which they've opened up, no doubt to Karen Gillette's chagrin. She didn't allow that when she was running the previous part of that program, when it was the Homeless Community Resource Center, and there was a Coral Street open-air shelter next door. She insisted that two very much overloaded porta-potties be used for, I don't know, several hundred people instead of the bathrooms in her little domain, the Homeless Service Center. I mean, the Homeless Community Resource Center. That was back in 1995.
It's a very different board, and it is a functional legal entity, a corporation. It's evolved a lot.
Well, apparently not enough, because we still have people who have no interest whatsoever in civil liberties for homeless people. I remember the previous executive director, Ken Cole, used to make a big thing about it, saying, well, you know, there are advocates like yourself, and there are service providers like us, and there's a difference. But in fact, I find that such distinctions kind of spurious in some respects, because he actually got a lot of power. He was in power for 10 years at that homeless service center. And the time he began to draw away from the homeless advocates was when we asked him to pressure then police chief Belcher. That was his name, Steve Belcher, previously police chief before the other two guys who now took over, Howard Scarry and Kevin Vogel.
Yeah, Ken was the vice chair.
We wanted him to proceed to pressure Belcher to come clean on figures regarding homeless assaults against the homeless. And Belcher did eventually issue a report that homeless people were 4 to 10 times more likely to be beaten or assaulted than people in houses. And that became a part of the city council's committee or task force to examine the camping ordinance, which met for 3 months and then essentially sabotaged, under Catherine Byers' leadership, any real modifications in the sleeping ban law of any substance. You were saying about Ken Cole.
Ken Cole was the vice chair on the Homeless Issues Task Force when I was the chair. And so that's kind of, you could say, the closest ongoing way I've worked with him, although he's helped me get people off the street a few times, which I think is more significant ultimately. But finally, I had enough connection with him to feel like he is in some ways more conservative than me. I just didn't pick up on it before.
You know, he's an out-of-town Seattle guy who got a plum job and stuck with it for 10 years. I don't know how much of a plum job. I mean, I imagine
it had a
certain hard job, but he didn't. If you compare his behavior with Doug Loisel's, who followed him, where Loisel made a number of significant changes. I mean, some of them I didn't agree with. He wanted to charge 50 cents for homeless meals.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they're still doing that or not. I think they probably stopped doing that. He opened up bathrooms at night. He opened up the whole homeless service center again during the day, saying you don't have to run in, get your mail, and run out and not loiter.
Yeah.
Because the staff finds it uncomfortable to have homeless people hanging around the premises, which was what I understand was the reason they closed it down in the mid around 2005, 2006 during the day, or made it only available if you were there for a specific purpose. They reopened it. It's this kind of, there seems to be a repressive dynamic. It happens with, I imagine it was happening with, maybe I'm just imposing my own view, but I imagine it was happening with this security guard who I mentioned earlier in the show came up and you know, told a curb hugger, Chris, he couldn't be spare changing in the site he was in, that people start exercising more and more control, and they persuade themselves that they're doing so for a good purpose.
I think, you know, as long as the money that's paying for it, be it the extra, the fake cops on the mall, or what the hours of open are for a center that's been given money for the people they're locking out or not, who gives them the money? How much is governmental? If it's a government stream, cash stream, then there's an excess liability. I'm saying that subjectively. It's like, people are like the third or fourth consideration in their policy thinking when they decide how to do something, because first they got to worry about the liability of do no harm on the government entity itself. And so if these entities, say the board members or the clients themselves, aren't butt-kissy enough, they lose money. And a lot of it has to do with perception, not actual behavior.
And I think there is a... Actually, I don't know if there's a likely loss of money coming up for the Homeless Service Center. I know the Community Programs Subcommittee of City Council, previously called the Social Services Subcommittee, met yesterday at 2 o'clock. That's now, of course, headed by the worst people, Robinson, Coonerty, and Matthews. And they were pressing around a survey about the priorities, and I suspect, although, you know, I could be wrong about this, that they're looking to do some changes. But what I did notice, they had a copy of the budget, which you can get online by going to the City of Santa Cruz website. And the total budget for the year for the Homeless Services Center is like $160,000. Whereas, for example, putting eight police officers on the mall involves $1 million. You know, I mean, that, for years, it's not just for, you know, it's filling those eight positions, which I believe Vogel, the police chief, has said he hasn't done yet. But the money has been authorized. It was authorized in secret in a closed session by the city council. And it was done as a paranoid response to some window breaking that happened on May 1st downtown. These police will have little impact on any window breaking. What they will have impact on is they'll be issuing the kinds of citations, and they'll be engaging in the kind of harassment of political protesters, panhandlers, homeless poor people, bicyclists, you name it, downtown, instead of actually being there for the real purpose.
Chill. Unless you have money, you chill.
Yeah, again, that I've spent a lot of time over the years bringing accounts of this kind of repression onto the air, and I go around and I ask people with my little tape recorder what's been happening, and we'll continue to do that. Let's hear more from the Homeless Services Center. Again, this is a meeting that happens monthly out at the Homeless Service Center. It's the Board of Directors. It's open to the public, although I had some difficulty getting in. I was kind of steered away, told to wait, and I ignored what she said and walked in, although it took a little courage for me to do that. I even though when I'm told meetings are public, you know, I think they should be public, or they have the right to be public, I act in that fashion some of the time. I mean, some of the time when the city council says, you just made a Nazi salute offending us by calling us a bunch of fascists in a silent manner, leave the chambers. And I say, no, I'm not going to leave the chambers. It's a public meeting. And then, of course, that ends up in a huge, endless process of legal activity where, frankly, those resources could be better used elsewhere, both on my side and the city's side. Yeah. But the point is still, public meetings have to be public meetings. And that's where succumbing to that kind of fear is essentially giving them a blank check to pursue these kinds of bad choices, which are, I'm afraid, coming down the pike at us. Back to the Homeless Service Center's Board of Directors from last August, last month. The issue is, please issue us a letter stating what you tell everybody, that there's no shelter. Their answer, we can't do that. Well, let's talk about, we really got to get moving here. Let's have another meeting some other time.
We, we recognize that we're doing our best to do what we can for as many people as we can. We're constrained by finances. We're constrained by space. We would love to have it be a permanent place where people could find homes and live there, like they do in the Dave Smith, and go into the community and have wonderful jobs.
I think this is Monica Martinez, but it could be Sally Williams. Williams is the head of the board of directors. Martinez is the executive director, who actually is sort of the on-the-site go-to person.
And pay their fair share and be part of the community. Monica is doing a wonderful job of trying to get people to take ownership interest and become a part of this community. As far as, I think Monica would be the best one to speak to. Dispelling a myth is one thing. Providing a generic letter that says that the wait is always 4 to 6 weeks, and you know that wouldn't work. What we want to do is have people keep trying, because we want the people to come into our program. We want them to show up. We want them to not lose hope, because there will be a space for them. It may be a wait, but there will be a space for them ultimately. And I think it's really fluid. It's really variable. Sometimes the wait is 5 days, as Monica has mentioned, and sometimes the wait is 4 weeks. I don't think it's constantly 4 to 6 weeks. I think that may be incorrect.
I think that's not Monica, but Sally Williams, because she's mentioning Monica.
But the bottom line is, we don't want people to develop the idea that there's never a place for them, so why bother? We want them to bother, because we want them here. We want our beds filled. We want to help people integrate back into society. I mean, that's what we're about. We'd love to be able to do for all the people that are here, where that's possible. And I don't know if anybody else wants to weigh in on that, but...
Let me, I'm not going to try to talk too much on this, but, you know, this is complete, I was going to say this is complete horseshit, but that's a little strong. Yeah, you certainly do want people to not give up hope and stop trying, but you don't want them to base their behavior on illusions and false information and false expectations. So, and likewise, you don't want the community to have false illusions and expectations about the number of shelter beds available and the general situation for each homeless person outside on any given night, and the absurdity of police enforcement of the sleeping ban in a city with essentially zero walk-in shelter throughout the late spring, summer, and early fall. That's my thought on this.
Not just absurdity, but abuse and inadequacy. It doesn't work. It just works to hurt people. It doesn't scare them away. We have a crisis of growing homelessness.
And again, I'm talking about Monica Martinez's statements. Not about the city's policies, not about the police department, not about the general concerns and what is right and wrong, but about the kind of deceptive double talk that is really going on here, because that's what has to be cut through when you're dealing with these kinds of bureaucrats. Otherwise, you get lost in the clouds, or in the muck, or in the fluff.
Perhaps their goal.
Yeah, well, they don't want to be they see themselves as, I think, between these different agencies, and they have to we have to consider their funding and so forth, as I mentioned before.
We give of ourselves tremendously because we care so much. And so we want you to know that. And I appreciate what you're doing. You're reminding everybody that there's more out there to be done.
And that's not what we're reminding them of. We're not doing that. We're demanding from them a letter stating what the facts are about their shelter system. And they're not giving it to us.
And we need that reminder. So the work you're doing is important.
And also, I hope there hasn't been a lot of confusion about messages about the services that we have, because I know, at least on my part, and hopefully on the staff that I work with.
This is Monica Martinez speaking, the other woman who was telling us that we do give of ourselves so much, this great board of directors that never approached a homeless protest and never themselves went to a court case involving a homeless person being harassed by the police, I would wager. It's, well,
the board chair, Robert. She, you know, the board chair kind of sets the tone. They don't actually go out and get their hands in the soup.
Well, not only is she setting the tone, she is essentially trying to deflect any discussion of the issue, as you pointed out, and it becomes obvious to me as I listen to this tape,
yes,
that she's essentially saying, well, you know, thank you so much for reminding us about that we can do more. No, no. I mean, she's misstating what we're saying. We're not saying...
She's obscuring it.
She's obscuring and misstating it and avoiding essentially responding to it. And I think I recognized this and simply wanted to get her to agree to do something, but that was not what I should have done. What I should have done was say, hold it, lady, get back to the subject at hand, or else we will, along with any news media we can get in town, make sure you get back to the subject at hand. You know, don't bullshit us anymore. Homeless people are out there suffering while you fluff around and bullshit and play funding games. So that's whether I said that or not, it could have been said more diplomatically. Like, you know, it sounds like you're not going to give us a letter. Therefore, we're going to have to bring the issue to the public's attention. Perhaps you'd like to show up next Monday when we'll be at the actual Homeless Services Center with whatever news media we can call again, asking for a letter. If you want to provide a letter before that date, we won't have to show up. In fact, I think that's what you should do with Ed Fry instead of meeting with them.
I'm still going to that.
Yeah,
thing.
I think what you should do is let me finish, Linda. Well, I think what you should do is we should all announce we're going to be showing up at the Homeless Service Center requesting the letter publicly, and we can spare them that embarrassment if they simply provide it. That's all we want, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's just a suggestion.
And so Monica now, and she's the one that has to deal with actual homeless people. Let's see if she's less fluff.
We're saying the same thing, which is the real, honest truth about the availability of shelter that we have and on what nights and how you access it. I really hope that that's as clear as possible, because it's already difficult to try to access services. So to receive mixed messages for an individual who's trying to access shelter services can be really confusing and could make somebody not want to come back. So I hope what you're hearing and what they're hearing and what the public who's reading the newspaper is hearing is the same. And I think we know that sometimes things get muddled, and, you know, a reporter who's trying to report very quickly might misstate things. But the message that we've said is exactly the same, which is that we do operate a wait list. Depending on the season, it could be longer or shorter. The beds that become available on Mondays, which is when beds become available, are available to those people on the wait list. Middle of the week, you may have other openings that may go to people on the wait list because people have moved out or people haven't showed up, they've abandoned their beds. At that time, if somebody on the wait list isn't present, we might find somebody from the street who just showed up that day and put them in that bed. So there are one-day turnarounds for people on occasion. We also prioritize beds for people who are perhaps in a medical crisis, a domestic violence situation, or some sort of referral from a mental health program. And those are beds that, to be perfectly honest, typically it's, do we have any cots? Can we throw it on the ground and we'll keep this person here for a night? It's not a fire hazard, and we know this isn't the way it's supposed to be done, but this is a priority here. This is a crisis, and we'll do that as well. And so that's the message that I'm sure that Daniel said when he was in the testimony last week, that I've said to any media that I've spoken with, and I want to make sure you guys understand as well. To reiterate what Sally said, we wish we could do more. And I know that you guys understand that, and that you're not coming to us to say offer more shelter. And you also understand the financial limitations that we're under.
So typically...
And I'm interrupting here with my comment, but both here on in the studio and then actually in the meeting. Linda, do you have any thoughts on what you've just heard?
You want my reaction to Monica?
Yeah.
Well, it seems like she'll be tough enough to do the job. It's grown a lot and changed a lot, including a 24/7 thing since Karen Gillette.
I mean, what she's saying, that's what I was looking for your reaction to. Well, let me tell you
No, it's just PR so far.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the issue that we raised is give us a letter. And she is making a statement, and they do know they're being tape recorded. I was quite open about it, and I didn't ask for permission. You know the rule: don't ask for permission, just ask for forgiveness.
My take is that she must think we were criticizing that they hadn't already done so, rather than just taking it the next step and asking for it again. We hadn't been through all the possible places. It shouldn't be this hard. But
I don't understand what you're saying, Linda. Sorry.
I felt that what Monica said was part of her PR about the shelter in general, and she
for
was
sure.
giving it to us because she thought we were being critical, and we have not begun to fight.
Well, I thought that, I mean, I think we were requesting a letter, and they were, and this instead of saying, yeah, sure, we'll write it up and have it in a couple of days for you. I mean, it'll include all these provisions that we have a waiting list, and beds become available on Monday for people on the waiting list, which is 25 people long, as far as I understand it. And since there are only 48 beds in the shelter and there's a month-long stay, it's not much of a turnover. I mean, I think what we should be doing is putting in another thing we can do is put in a Public Records Act request asking, she also said, that occasionally there are beds that open up at midweek because people leave or, you know, unexpectedly. Then of course, I think we found out that you've got to be on the waiting list to get into those beds. And if you are, there's nobody there on the waiting list, then you could get in. But my question is, how often does this happen? I mean, is this a regular occurrence or is it, you know, infrequent? We can try to get those stats. But the point is, she could have said, you know, you're looking for a letter, happy to do it. Any problems, Sally? Any problems with think the board have any problems? Because we are giving out that information through Daniel White.
Well, I believe she could not say that, and this was her way of telling us.
He did testify in court, you know, that was the case. Yeah, I agree with you, Linda. And I think the fact that she did not do that was her way of saying, we're not going to do that. Instead, well, thank you really very much. And we don't mean to offend anybody or to miscommunicate. And I'm glad you've reminded us. Blah, 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 is pretty much what
I like how she threw the media in as an extra third entity. That's what they taught me in parenting classes, to blame Mr. Clock when the kids have bedtime. Point to the clock, you know, so they're not mad at you. And I felt she used the media that way because they weren't present.
Well,
that was clever.
It is true that the Sentinel... She was quoted at length in one of the first Sentinel stories about shelter. They've had a lot of talk about, oh, they're challenging the sleeping ban at Peace Camp, Santa Cruz Peace Camp 2010. You know, oh, they're getting arrested. Oh, is it legal? Is it not? Oh, what about the county and the city jurisdictions? Blah blah blah.
Oh, yeah.
But the actual issue that there's not any shelter beds for these people was essentially ignored or misstated by the media. They went to Monica, and she, according to the quotes, also misstated the issue. Yeah, we have shelter beds opening up on Monday, is what was quoted in the Sentinel that she was saying.
I see.
So that
was her defense board as well as her feather to us.
That's what she was... I mean, she, I think...
From the Sentinel.
You know, it seemed to me, I was pissed because it sounded to me like she and the board were colluding with the police and the city establishment in trying to maintain the illusion that it's okay to arrest and ticket and cite homeless people and protesters because they don't have a legitimate issue around this shelter, which is completely false and hurts people significantly every night. They lose their property, they lose their dignity, they lose often their
sleep.
They lose their sleep for sure, and they may lose their life. You know, people can get beaten up. The assault rate, I suspect, has not dropped. It's probably still 4 to 10 times, if not higher. There's a report this year on hate crimes against the homeless by the National, not the National Law Center, but the National Coalition for the Homeless, which I've always bring into the studio but never actually seem to have the time to talk about. I'm going to continue to try to play the rest of this since we only have about 13 minutes left in the show. Again, you can call in 427-3772 if it's September 9th still where you are.
Do you have a waiting list of 4 to 6 weeks, or is it less generally throughout the summer? Because you're familiar with the statistics, I'm sure, for the last 2 months.
Sure. So for the summer, I'd say for women, it could be 2 to 4 weeks. For men, it could be 4 to 6 weeks.
Monica Martinez.
So there could be an exception on any particular...
It could be an exception. It could be
difficult because different as well as the priorities and the midweek and the weather.
It really jumps around. And a waiting list isn't as simple as 25 names. You've got people who sign up once and never show up, people who are coming back frequently, you've got duplications of names, you've got all sorts of things. So it does get a little complex with the program manager dealing with it.
But it's not really complex. The issue is how many people a week actually, how many beds are vacated every week generally? In other words, how many spaces, if you look at the last two or three months, How likely is it that someone's going to get a space in the shelter because of all these complex variety of circumstances? We know that every Monday they take people at the bottom of the waiting list. Some people leave, some people come on. And we know also that sometime during the week, if Monica is accurate, some people don't show up, so those beds are opened up. But how often does that happen? And that's a very simple stat to provide. This is a kind of a group that keeps these stats, right, Linda?
If they want any more money in the future, they have to keep the units of, what do they call it, shelter units. That could be a cot or a whole bedroom furnished.
So this is another evasion on the part of Monica. We have to hold them to the fire. They're not going to come out and embarrass themselves by saying, A, we don't have enough shelter, which they say, but B, and now we're colluding with the police by not issuing letters, and C, we're not issuing the general statement because we don't want to offend the merchants and the police and create a problem in the courts that would mean that homeless people who are outside have a defense against police actions against them for sleeping at night because they have no shelter, and we've admitted it. And also, I think this is something to consider. They may be saying this also might cut down on the number of homeless people coming to use our services because they don't like our services, but they're forced into our services by this punitive requirement that we won't write you a letter unless you're on the waiting list, and also by the fact that if the community becomes aware that there is no shelter and the police are then forced to stop ticketing, why bother to go to the homeless services center? Find your own shelter. Form your own community groups.
Well, truthfully, the shelter isn't how the homeless services center is most helpful. Shelter is something they have some of.
Right,
they don't even have 100 places, but they got 1,000 clients.
But remember what Sally Williams was saying about how we want people to come back to our... We don't want people to give up hope around shelter. That's why we want them on our... The waiting lists are for shelter. They're not for the other services,
right,
generally.
That's what we're talking about
in this tape. We're not talking about the other services. So I think this could be part of their attempt to corral people into their services by saying, if you don't come to us, you're in the arms of the police.
Let me answer you a different way, Robert. I've talked to a lot of people, mostly through Peace Camp, who use those services. None of them have taken seriously that they would get shelter there. None of them. None of the street homeless.
But you're not talking about the same thing I'm talking about. I mean, I'm not saying that there aren't other services provided. I'm talking about the concern that homeless people would not use their shelter services.
They won't. They already know not to if they've tried.
Right. But the point is that if it becomes legal to sleep, as it is in other cities, then they even more likely, less likely to use their shelter services.
That's bullshit. I'm going to have to get my old...
Wait a minute. What's bullshit? What are you talking about?
If what you said is true...
Well, I'm just wondering. I'm posing it as a question. I don't have any proof, but it seems to me that these shelter services and these programs tend to protect themselves. They want to increase their funding, increase their budgets. They believe they're doing a good thing.
You're right. It could fall apart. They might actually have to talk to homeless people to find out what their most needed services are if things got shook up too suddenly.
Right. So, I mean, I think there may be essentially a rather... A bad motive here as well, a bad motivation. But again, you know, it's hard to tell. So let's see.
Would there be any problem in asking a member of the staff on any given night to be available for the police to call in to say, is there a bed available tonight?
Why?
I mean, would that be a possibility? Let me ask this question of people who are working here.
My response to that is, if anybody calls looking for shelter, whether
Monica
they're the police
Martinez.
Or they're somebody who's looking for shelter that night because they're homeless, if they can get through to a person, I hope they could because we do have 24-hour staff, but if somebody answers that phone, they're going to be honest and say whether or not there's shelter available in that moment. We are one out of 4 or 5 different organizations in the county that provide shelter, so we can only speak on behalf of our organization. We can't speak on behalf of River Street, which is right next door, or organizations in Watkinsville, New Life, or...
I understand that.
Yeah. So.
Now, there is a somewhat deceptive element in that answer. And the reason that I say that is because when I talked to Daniel White some days later, and I asked, well... Because this really was the subject of the meeting that you and Sally Williams and Ed Fry and perhaps Kate Wells have planned, which is to say, can you get make sure that there'll be someone on the spot or a recording that says every night there's no shelter beds and the police can be informed, and then you would hope the police wouldn't issue tickets. Or if there is a shelter bed, they would say, okay, you get a ticket because you can go to the shelter if you don't want to go to the shelter bed. But the fact of the matter is, when I talked to Daniel White, he told me after 4 o'clock, they may have somebody on the property who is a security person who will answer the phone. The person may even know whether the shelter is full or not, but they won't let anybody in after 4 o'clock. And they won't let anybody in without a reference, like from a hospital or something. So unless their policy changes, that would be... It wouldn't matter that they said that at all, and she didn't clarify that, because that would be that you might say, well, she hasn't really asked that, but in a way she is, because what Ed Fry is trying to get is a mechanism by which the police will lay off homeless people if they know there's no shelter beds, at least in the homeless service center, no shelter beds. And since the homeless service center, and this is again what comes to the previous discussion we had, Linda, is the party that the courts will look to if you don't have a shelter and you issue a letter, then we'll dismiss your ticket, it becomes a key part of the defense of a homeless person against the sleeping ban. I think we can probably finish this up in the next 6 minutes, hopefully. You want to say anything, Linda?
No, that's good.
But this is a very crucial point, and in fact it's on appeal at the court now. And that is, when there are no shelter spaces here, the court eventually gets around to dismissing the ticket. The problem with that is, this innocent homeless person has already been punished. Policeman has awakened him or her, told him to sign here or you're going to jail, told him to move on, get your stuff and get out of here. Then he has to go to court. Then the judge will tell him, just come over here, and from the homeless service director get a statement that there were no shelter spaces available, and then bring it back, and I'll dismiss your ticket. So then he goes here, and he goes back to court. So he's got to be awakened and moved away and goes run 3 different errands, and then he's told he's innocent, but he's already been punished, and that's what I'm trying to stop. So that we need some way for the police to call here a reliable way and say any spaces or not, and when they're not, then the police should not enforce the law against anyone.
So the one important point that is missing in the steps is
Martinez.
What happens if somebody receives a citation, they approach the judge says, if you can prove that you were on a wait list, then we may dismiss your claim.
This, I don't think, is accurate. I've seen people in court with tickets, and I haven't seen a lot of it, and I mostly hear about this happening. I don't think that the judge asks if you're on a wait list. I think the referee, I should say Commissioner Kim Baskett, is the person who receives most of these citations, asks, did you get a letter from the Homeless Service Center?
I think this is a new turn. I don't think that was true more than a day before that board meeting we were at.
Well, again, remember, you're saying that in the past people were put on a wait list when they went in to ask for a letter. So, you know, they would also be on, if what you say is accurate, they would have been on the wait list when they brought the letter in to the judge. But I don't recall judges or any homeless person telling me they had to say she had to say she was on a wait list.
They just said,
I have to have a letter.
This is a new thing. They're trying to make it easier for the shelter, I imagine.
Well, she's deflecting things onto the judge. She's saying the judge is requiring that they be on a wait list. That is something I've never heard, and frankly, I wonder if it's true.
To me, Robert, the question is, did the judges know that when she said that at this meeting? Because I don't think anybody else knew it more, like I said, than a day ahead of that.
Well, I don't think the judges... She's claiming the judges are making that claim, and I don't think they are.
So, or your citation. So that person comes, and they'll contact our shelter manager, who will look to see if that person has been here, was on the wait list, had tried to access services. If their name was on the list during the time when that citation was issued, then they'll get a letter. And that letter can go back to the judge. And then the judge may, not by policy, but may choose to dismiss. And that's my understanding of how it works.
But again, the person has already been punished. There should be no enforcement action whatsoever by the police.
All right. We need to go ahead and work with the US. Yes. I'm going to say, you know, I hear you, Ed, but I don't see your solution. We're not going to say we're always full.
I didn't ask you to say you're always full. Just say you're full when you're full. That's all I'm asking.
Well, and
every night to the police.
Okay, here's what we're going to do. This is a board meeting. We have work to get done. We've heard what you had to say. You've heard what we had to say. I think we need to take this outside the board meeting and maybe meet with the police and see if there's a resolution. Monica has just told you that whoever is answering the phone is going to truthfully say that. If that's something that will work with the police, that's fine. If the person needs a letter, the procedure has been explained to you by Monica. So, other than that, I don't know if that will work, and we don't have the police here to discuss it with, so we need to take this outside before the meeting.
You usually have someone on call at night who can answer that question.
That's what she said, 24 hours.
Because generally, if a police officer calls in, he'll get an answer.
Is it Robert? You're just making it
worse. We have people on staff who are assigned to a variety of tasks during their time here overnight. So if there's somebody at the desk near a phone at that time and not doing security and not interacting with clients and things like that, they may answer the phone. I can't guarantee, but they may answer the phone.
Okay.
Yeah. And they will answer honestly.
I really don't think
so. We're going to have to cut this short unless...
Just like the board did. Just like the board did. Just when I had something to say.
Well, Linda, go ahead and say we have someone on the phone who's also waiting
okay.
to get
I'm
in.
No, it's okay. I'm just saying. Somehow I
well,
always
no,
get...
Well, no. Go ahead. Say what you need to say. Are you there, Dave, by the way? Hang in.
All I was saying at that meeting... I can't just... I'm tied to a mic, ear thing. I was trying to say there are other approaches that don't put it all on that shelter and then don't de-dignify homeless people.
Mm-hmm. Dave, give me your quick update before I have to... leave the studio.
Quick update. One ticket at the drum circle for smoking a cigarette. Not too casual, kind of entrapment sort of maneuver by some tall white cop. Don't want to mess with him. Kind of looks like a jarhead type. So the drum circle went over great. Picked up all the garbage. As much as I could that day. And everyone was real happy. So, y'all having fun with that homeless conversation now. I'm sorry about the emotions flying there. This is a tough town to live in, man.
Particularly if you're homeless.
Yeah, it really is, man. I mean, the mayor parks his motorcycle for free.
Yeah,
so there
what about
you go.
That? What about that? Yeah,
and there's penguins, too. You know, like Batman, you know, and I got a message for him, boy, about those penguins. Mayor Rockin' Man.
Thank you. Thank you, Drum Circle Dave. I will pass that on to him if I remember, which I'm
remember
pretty sure
the penguins,
I
won't.
Thank you.
Peace.
Amen. That's it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides on this particular show. Uncle Dennis is waiting with his finger on the button to give me the finger, so to speak. He gave me the finger. Amazing. What the situation is that we weren't really able to finish the Homeless Service Center tape. I wasn't able to play you the Robert Facer, Robert Norris interrogation, which is interesting. I'll try to play that on Sunday. Peace Camp 2010, every night is meetings at 8:15. That's where perhaps Linda and I are going to go now.
And music.
And see what's happening. There's also music on occasion. And you can reach me on the Huff line if you have questions or if you want to volunteer at 423-4833. My thanks to Dennis for allowing us to go an extra 2 minutes into his three-hour show. And I'll be back again on Sunday morning at 9:30 and talk to you then.
that you can't go on. And your wheels sinking low. Everybody needs a light. Ooh, yeah, yeah.
little bit of music there for you just to get started. Led Zeppelin off the album Physical Graffiti in the Light. I'm Uncle Dennis. Want to welcome you to streaming Free Radio Santa Cruz, www.freakradio.org. Unfortunately, 101.1 went off the air on sometime early Tuesday morning. Something happened, and we had a small failure in the transmitter, and have not been able to repair it. It's possible we may have to replace the transmitter, and we are working on our options at the moment, of which there are not a whole lot of good ones. If you happen to have a 100-watt FM amplifier sitting in your garage gathering dust, give us a call, because we could sure use one right now. We're off the air. So, anyway, that's the way it is right now. So, anyway. Free radio is, well, we went along for years without a working backup, and now when we need one, we ain't got one. So, anyway, that's our situation. That's why we're not broadcasting at the moment, and coming on the heels of being off the air for a month due to the fact we didn't have a place to be is a different thing. So this is just a little bit of frustration here at the old studio. Anyway, we're going to keep on keeping on, so stay tuned. We got the helps if I load the right tune. Anyway,
it's not the one I wanted.
Yeah, I guess it is. Anyway, we're going to play this and then open up a beer in a while. And of course, at 9 o'clock, the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use. And at 10 o'clock, the Spotlight Group of the Week, where we will play some vinyl from years past. And we have some new vinyl here in the studio. Uncle Dennis blew $20 and got a few records, so we will see what we've got on tap. We might even play some of that before 10 o'clock. But anyway, stay tuned for all that. Of course, 11 o'clock, the Church of the Subgenius Hour of Slack for you here right on Free Radio Santa Cruz, www.freakradio.org.
We got a little number from our first album we're going to do for you. Barry starts her up.